Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We are broadcasting live today from the Chadwick Arboretum and Learning Gardens 2014 plant sale on the OSU campus. Check out the link on our website for more information on this weekend-long event. It was one of those winters, cold and snowy and long, and some of our plants didn't survive. Joining us now to talk about how to revive our gardens this year is Ohio's garden sage, Deborah Kanapke. Deborah, welcome to the show.
Nice to be back.
And also with us for a few moments is Mary Maloney. She's director of the Chadwick Arboretum and Learning Gardens annual plant sale. Well, not the whole gardens and arboretum.
That's it. But it's the volunteers who run the plant sale.
The volunteers are everywhere. How many do you have working here?
Well, we have about 160 volunteers officially registered. We have a leadership team of about 25. And they work on this project, this 2.5-day project, year-round, and every year, build it. And then this provides operating funds for the Arboretum, as well as some of our student groups and some of our local vendors.
How many people do you expect here over the course of a typical plant sale weekend?
Well, we like to think about 1,500 circle through. And last night was our friends' night. We had a great showing there, and lots of plant material went out the door. It's just very festive.
The good thing about a sale like this is when there's a little rain, it's good for the plants, right?
You know, gardeners, I think in a normal, any setting, a picnic, I don't know what, people would run for shelter. But gardeners, a little bit of garden rain is only enhances what they're trying to do. So this, we have a little tiny shower going on just now, but
it's practically over with.
Yeah.
You call that a tiny shower?
It was
really blowing here for a bit.
I'm a Celt, okay. The Irish rain.
This is misty. It's good for the complexion.
That's true.
Okay, so I wanted to ask you, Mary, about what the polar vortex damage was to the arboretum and the gardens. I know that you sent out a little memo this past winter.
Well, it was. We're still discovering the extent of the damage. A lot of our woody trees and shrubs we're not even touching. We just want to see how they push out. Everything's a little bit late in bud and leaf out this year. So we're watching that. In the herbaceous part of the gardens, some areas plants did very well. The same plant in another area completely gone. And even some tried and true plants. So we're still evaluating, and after the plant sale, we'll get back to the gardens full time and really see how things go.
Deb Kanapke, any surprises from where you sit as far as what the effects were? First of all, when something like that happens over a winter, I would think as a scientist, as someone who's pays attention to the natural environment, there's probably a lot of curiosity about how is it going to turn out. What will survive?
And you wouldn't believe how many questions I got from everyone. Are my plants going to die? Which ones are going to live? And I had the very same questions about mine. I'm still watching some trees to see if they're coming back.
Uh-huh.
Some I know aren't. You know, the buds are dead. And you cut into cut a piece of branch off, and there's nothing there. So I've had a few surprises. And just like Mary said, I have the same plants planted in different areas. In some areas, they did phenomenal. In fact, better. This is the best iris year ever.
I agree.
Great.
Oh, my gosh.
Why
the
do
iris,
you think?
I don't know, because their rhizomes are right there on the soil. But
that
we
means
had
the
snow.
Bulbs. Go
yeah.
ahead.
Okay.
We need to do
the rhizomes. You know, the storage thingies on there. So they're right there, but the snow was there covering them the whole time. And they need to be cold. They really need to be cold. So I'm just enjoying my irises and my peonies. They're phenomenal. So I'm still waiting to see what's going to happen. I had a great daffodil show that looked like
yep.
it was going to go down because then it got hot, but then it cooled off, and they've been lasting forever. So I don't know. This has just been a mixed bag, and I'm just enjoying seeing things coming back.
Is it just me, or it looks like the boxwoods took a big hit this year, at least in our neighborhood? I mean, whole rows of boxwoods, completely mm-hmm. brown, but ours, we have some little boxwoods in our backyard. They're right behind some arborvitae,
mm-hmm.
and they did well.
How long have they been planted?
Just since last fall.
Oh, because yeah. those are the ones that have been taking the
You know, that's what I thought, too. In the Arboretum Gardens, we have many types of boxwood, different hardiness on them, really. Mm-hmm. And we've had great surprises and, you know, complete burnout in mm-hmm. some of them. And others, like nothing, you know, scathed them at all. They weren't affected by the cold.
Well, I think we have a couple things going on. The Volutella blight, which is where half the plant dies, has been weakening some of them. We've had a lot of the psyllids. They're these little jumping flies that drive you nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have the boxwood blight. So I think these things were also happening at the same time.
Okay.
And I think almost all the English box, if you would agree, the English box really took a hit. They're the straight ones, the sempervirens types. So, but the ones from Korea, I'm sorry. I just confused her again.
Listeners, I'm kind of going, yeah, right, the sempervirens,
yeah,
too.
Yeah,
I have no idea what she's
the box is sempervirens. Those are the English box. But the Korean box and the Siberian, the ones from Russia, those have been doing much better.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're broadcasting live from the Chadwick Arboretum and Learning Gardens 2014 plant sale. If you want to learn more about that, it goes on through tomorrow. Check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. With me here at the sale is Deborah Konapke, Ohio's garden sage, gardening author and expert. Also with me is Mary Maloney. She's the director of the Chadwick Arboretum and Learning Gardens. Mary, tell us about what's going on at the sale this weekend.
Well, it's a pretty substantial, inclusive sale. We have annuals, perennials, trees, shrubs. We have an auction that's getting ready to kick off at
today
noon.
And tomorrow.
That's right, mm-hmm. right. It's free to get a bid number and some wonderful plants. Peter Zale, who I believe just finished his PhD in our horticulture department, is going to be describing the plants today. So,
and there's garden art.
Garden art, mm-hmm. botanicals here, botanical products, friends, memberships, the Master Gardeners, Franklin County Master Gardeners are here with
the
beekeepers.
Their vegetables.
Mention the bees. Oh, of course. Yeah, the Central Ohio Beekeepers Association.
Right.
And they have a live display here. And boy, there's a small child right in front of the active hive right now enjoying mm-hmm. it in this little spring sprinkle.
And there's a jewelry. There's all kinds of stuff
there's
for sale.
There's ceramics.
There.
There's honey. I love honey.
Yeah, honey good.
There's just all kinds of plants, and everything looks really fresh now that the rain has stopped. Yes.
So, another point of pride are all of our student groups who, Pi Alpha Xi is here and Crop and Soil Science Club and the Plant Pathology Graduate Student Association, and they take great pride in producing their plants on campus and then selling them to the public. And we have customers who come back looking for them year after year. In a good way.
In a good way. Not hunting them down,
yeah,
but
looking
seeking
for
them
their
out.
Plants. How about that?
In the ongoing saga of my Montmorency cherry tree.
Okay, here we go.
It didn't seem to get as many blooms this year, mm-hmm. or the blooms didn't fully actualize. They didn't, you know. Come on.
Yeah.
Did fruit trees take a hit? Is that one of the things that you were
yeah.
thinking about, that you were talking about?
What did Mitch Lynn say, that he thought that the peach crop was mostly or all gone?
Yep, he did.
Which is depressing.
Because of that snow, that late spring mm-hmm. snow we had?
It came out, it happened, it hit just as they were opening.
That's the thing. When weather events happen at a critical time mm-hmm. in the physiology of the plants, and it can really make or break. If it's a day or two, it makes all the difference in expansion of buds and fruit production, when the flowers come out.
But I think the apples are okay.
I think they said a little later bloom on those this year.
Right.
But they're going to get the bloom they need to get the fruit.
Right.
Okay.
And it's funny because sometimes plants will adjust. And the closer they are to being native to a region, the more they may adjust to temperature fluctuations. If they're not native to a region, they are less likely to adjust to the possible temperature fluctuations. I'm not saying this always happens, but it tends to be. Now, with apples, they're later anyway, so that's good. And my rhubarb came up beautifully this year, but it was late. So things waited. The soil was too cold.
There were very cold temperatures this winter, but there was also a lot more snow, and that's helpful, isn't it?
Extremely.
Yes, I agree. Another thing, too, in Ohio, we have a pretty substantial grape crop, and that was hugely devastated this year. I think they're saying something like 97% of the crop lost, and, you know, a lot of wine is produced in Ohio, and...
That's making me cry.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You've really touched a nerve.
I know. We have some really nice wineries here in Ohio, and I was listening to where some of the damage was, and it was right where I like to purchase from.
Shoot. Oh, well, that just means the price goes up. But
the thing about horticulture people is they will begin again. They cannot be repressed. I mean, the weather is a tiny, I'm not even going to call it a hurdle, a little blip in the road for them. And this is the perfect time for the spring plant sale to bring people back out so they can...
Replace,
that's
repair.
It. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Well, both of you mentioned that you're kind of waiting and seeing. Mm-hmm. Let's take, you know, somebody's got a... just a plant, they're not sure, maybe there's a little growth and underneath it, and they want to wait and see. How long do you wait to see
if
whether something's coming back?
If the ground has been warmed up, and like say you're waiting for a rose to come back, the knockout roses took a little bit of a hit, and they're real slow to come on this year, I probably wait another couple weeks.
And that's it.
And then I'd say it's time to buy another rose or another plant or who knows what.
And just pull that sucker out and start over again.
Yeah.
Compost it and
you know,
move on.
But the most wonderful thing about this is that I'm sitting here looking at all these plants I want and I have no place to put. So if something dies.
It's an opportunity.
I get to plant something I want.
There you go. The upside. Well, I want to thank Mary Maloney for joining us for this segment. And good luck with the sale this weekend.
Thanks
for having us.
Thank you so much, Ann. Thank you for being on site. I think so many people want to see the face of Ann Fisher, and they know that you're a great gardener as well. And I'm just so thankful that you and your technical staff are on site with us at the Ohio State University Chadwick Arboretum. I think we're both working hard to raise funds and awareness for both public radio and public gardens. So thank you very much. Today is actually National Public Gardens Day.
Right. Honestly?
As it's practiced by the American Public Gardens Association. So always this Friday, the Friday before Mother's Day.
And there's going to be a link to the program.
There is.
On their national website.
That's it.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Mary Maloney, thanks again.
Thank you, Ann.
Mary Maloney, she's director of the Chadwick Arboretum and Learning Gardens. We are broadcasting live from the Chadwick Arboretum and Learning Gardens annual plant sale. It's down here on Lane Avenue, right off the expressway, right off through 15. If you want to learn more about it, you can go to the link on our website at WOSU.org. Deborah Kanapke and I will continue our conversation about gardening in this unusual environment. Never a dull moment when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome to All Sides. I'm Ann Fisher. We are broadcasting live today from the Chadwick Arboretum and Learning Gardens 2014 plant sale. It's on the OSU campus on Lane Avenue. For more information, you can go to the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. We've been talking with Ohio's garden sage, Deborah Kanapke. She's still with us. Deborah, thanks again for joining us.
Oh, this is a fun one.
This is the show about how to recover from the polar vortex.
That's right.
Of a winter.
And I have to tell you, I just had a new drink. A friend of mine loves to make new drinks. He calls it the cosmic vortex.
That's the cosmic vortex.
Yes, and okay. So it's a Cosmo with really expensive, yummy tequila.
no mixing.
I know,
mixing allowed.
But it was really sinfully good, and I stopped after one because I could already feel the kick.
The vortex
was sucking me in.
We talk about vortex,
and it's funny how then everything starts bouncing off those words.
But you know what, yeah, it becomes like a mem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the issue of snow though is really important. It got very, very cold, but if it had been that cold with no snow all winter, and we've had winters with very little or no snow, that would have been a lot worse.
We'd have a lot more dead plants. We'd have a lot of Anything that was close to the surface would probably be significantly decreased vigor or dead. And then a lot of our trees, without that snow around their roots, they too would have had problems. So yeah, I'm extremely thankful for the snow, even though we had to shovel.
Let's take a call now from Jim in Columbus. You're on the air. Hi, Jim.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I heard somebody mention rhubarb.
Yes.
And I got a couple plants. This is the second season for them. I put them in last spring or whatever. And this year, I noticed a big ball cluster coming up on them. You know, the top of it, it's like the stem's just growing straight up and on top of that. What is that, and what should I do, if anything?
We call that the flower.
Okay.
That's going to come up, and it's going to be, it'll open up, and it's actually a gorgeous flower. But for the most part, you really don't want that to do that. So if you're thinking of harvesting your rhubarb to eat, you want to cut that ball off, because it actually sucks energy from the plant itself and not being able to put that energy into the stems and into the leaves. Yeah.
Does that come, the ball come every year? Or sounds like he's not seen it before.
No. Sometimes I see it and other times I don't. And I've had rhubarb in the past where I've gone 5 years without it blooming. And then I've had it bloom like 2 or 3 years in a row. So I'm not sure what gets it going. And I have an idea. It might be our cold winter.
Huh.
Might have been cold enough to get the flower buds vernalized.
So it's interesting all the different impacts the cold weather could have had on our different plants. Jim, thanks a lot for that call. We appreciate it. I read an OSU Extension story about freeze blankets. What are they and how do they work? What are
a freeze blanket?
Or are there, it sounded like just something that you put over plants to keep them, to protect them.
Well, I know that in the nursery business, you know, in they used to, if they don't have greenhouses, minimum heat greenhouses, they would put blankets over their plants for the winter.
Okay.
And that's how they would carry them over. I would imagine there's something for the homeowner to put blankets down. I wouldn't do it because that just seems like a mess to me. I figure either the plant's going to grow in my yard or it's going to die and I get to put something else
right,
in.
Right, opportunity knocking.
That's right.
Again.
But I suppose if you're trying to cheat on your zone envy, and go for that zone 7 plant that's been growing for you for 7 years.
Or not.
But and then you get this cold, you think, oh, well, shoot, I'm going to see if I can help this out. You know, it may help. I'm not familiar with it.
Okay.
I'm going to look that up, freeze blanket.
If you have a question or comment for Deborah Kanapke, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can, well, just let's stick to call, 614-292-8513. But we do have an email from Mary Jo. She says, this winter, our hollies died. Some of them only half died. Should we try to save the other half?
It depends on which half died, the front half or the back half.
You know, what you have to look at.
Yeah, you have. Okay. What are you looking at? Is it... I would imagine it's the front half because that's what was exposed to the weather. And if you can't cut that front half off, what does the plant look like? And if it looks like heck, then take it out and put new hollies in. But if you think you can live with it as it grows back in, then keep it. It depends on how much was killed. But if the part of the plant that is still there looks healthy, give it a try. You have nothing to lose other than, you know, one season. And then maybe save some money. Or if you don't like the way it looks, come and please support my industry and buy more hollies.
And when you buy hollies, you want to make sure there's a male and female still?
Yes, okay. Always. Or hopefully if your male lived or your female's lived, you know which one's lived. But you need at least one male. I think it's 8 to 10 female hollies.
Okay. I lost most of my herb garden. The only thing that I saved was the chives. I didn't even try to save them. I mean, the only thing that survived, I should say, was the chives and the sorrel. What did you notice? Well, and a little bit of oregano.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Well, my oregano's coming back like gangbusters, so if you want some, I'll give you some.
Okay, good.
That's one.
Okay.
Two, the thymes took a huge hit.
Yeah.
And part of it was the cold, but with the snow, that should have helped. But another part was we had a lot of water in the soil, and thymes don't like that.
Mm-hmm.
They're a subshrub. and they want their fine roots not to be suffocated with water. So I think it was a 1-2 punch of it being an extended cold with wet soils.
Is the plant reaction going to differ much if it's in a raised bed, say in a box garden, versus right into the ground? Is there going to be a different impact from the cold?
It's interesting you should ask that, because we have some raised gardens at the Flint Cemetery, where we have some thymes in raised beds. And they didn't do much better. There was a raised area that we amended for the thymes, and a couple of the beds did fantastic and a couple did not. And again, it's that hit or miss that makes you wonder what is exactly happening in the winter. What are these cold patterns? And one of the beds, I know it's because it's a lot of water. It holds water. But the other one, I don't know why it did well, and this one did not, when they are essentially the same. I don't know. I wish I did. I'd make money.
You talk about dispersing things like herbs and edible plants throughout your garden, and not just having necessarily everything together at one, you know, all your food plants in one place and all of your flowering in another.
Right. And I still do that, and I'm going to continue to do that, because I can't, well, first of all, I can't seem to do anything purely 100% herb garden here, cutting garden here. It just doesn't work that way.
It's very eclectic.
Well, it's not only that. It's just that I'll go to the store and find something I just have to have. And it's not going to fit in some perfect little place, but it'll fit over here. So it's all mixed up. And I don't know. We're all mixed up, so why not our gardens?
Yeah, the reflection. I heard that part shade and part full sun area is good for lettuce. That they like the shade. They like the cooler soil.
There are a group of plants. You know, it's kind of a misnomer that all vegetables have to have full sun. Full sun being defined as 6 hours of sun a day. Lettuces, plants that we eat the vegetative part, you know, not the flowers, not the fruit, but the vegetative part, they actually tend to like some respite from the sun. They don't... I mean, they'll do okay, but you have to water them more, like lettuce. If they're in full sun, you have to keep them more watered, otherwise they're going to wilt. For lettuces and mesclun and all those wonderful greens we eat, morning sun is the best, south sun, and then west shade is actually good for them.
West shade. Shade coming during the setting sun, you
Yeah.
mean? Okay.
Shade in the afternoon after 2, 3 o'clock is great. And they'll actually take it before then. I've grown lettuce in 4 hours of sun. I think, 4 hours of sun, and it's grown well. I've actually grown a lot of things in less sun than recommended, but then it's not always perfect.
Right.
You know, they'll stretch a little
bit.
Well,
I have to, because I have so much shade in my yard. I have to make, you know.
Well, there was a list that I did. For a talk of vegetables and fruits that take less sun. You know, in fruits, it's like currants and gooseberries. Mm-hmm. They both take less sun. You should try those for your yard if you want fruit. Raspberries, you have to play with. Some of the cultivars will take less sun, although for best fruit flavor, you need full sun.
Yeah. All right. Well, I was going to ask you about the raspberries.
Okay.
We'll see. Jeff in Worthington, you're on the air with Deb Kanapke. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Jeff.
Hey, good morning. My question has to do with protecting buddleia. I have 7 buddleia that I planted 7 to 8 years ago. I pile 1.5 feet of wood chips all around them, on top of them, pouring over the crown, the whole 9 yards, and they're dead.
What's a buddleia?
Butterfly bush.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That you have to talk English for
Anne. Like for common references
That's
to
right.
plants.
That's okay. we call them both butterfly bush and buddleia, but I am surprised that 1.5 foot of wood chips did not save your buddleias. I have buddleias that came back beautifully, and I had buddleias that died. And I don't protect them like you do, because I figure if they're going to die, then I will get one that's hardier. But... if you're trying to I mean, if you really, really want to protect a buddleia, you could also use some burlap around the bottom of the shrub, because they're going to come up from their roots. They are root hardy to zone 5. And we did have a zone 5 winter, even in Worthington, and parts of Worthington, depending on where you're at, you probably had the warmer zone 5, because Worthington is much more protected than being out in the bright, open, broad open spaces. So are you seeing no growth at all, Jeff?
Them off a twig that's above, or a major growth out of, there's a little bit of green coming out. And usually, but usually I'm, by this time, I've just got these green sprouts that are just busting through, you know, the wood chips, and that is just not happening.
Well, buddleias, like so many other plants, are waiting for the ground to warm up. Our winter was so cold that it's taken a while for the ground to warm up, and they're not going to start growing until they get enough growing degree days, warmth above the soil, warmth in the air that then warms up the soil.
Jeff, good luck with those.
Yeah.
If you have a question or comment for Deb Kanapke, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. We are broadcasting live today from the Chadwick Arboretum and Learning Gardens 2014 plant sale. For more information about the plant sale, which goes on through tomorrow, you can go to the website at wosu.org/allsides, and we have a link there for you with more information. My guest is Deborah Kanapke, garden author and expert known as the Garden Sage. 614-292-8513. If you have any questions for... Going back to the raspberry bush issue.
Okay, you're going to get back to the raspberries.
Well, ours is going to need some support this summer. Any suggestions for how to stake it or pull it up and hold it up? And
well, there are different ways
of doing
it.
And we're getting shoots coming up from all over the place.
Right. And some people like to... Well... There are different ways of doing it. You can stake each one individually, which is a pain in the butt.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can make some type of wooden structure that looks, you know, two posts or several posts going up. I don't remember how big your raspberry patch is. And then you take wires at about 2 feet and then 4 feet.
Okay.
So you have these poles and then you have these wires and then they stay in between the wires and you train them up to do that.
Okay.
So you train them, you know, about a foot wide on the wires and make sure all those canes go up between them. If a one goes real far out, then dig it up and put it back where it belongs.
Okay. It looks like the impatiens are back. I've seen them in commercial operations.
Now,
but
the
not a lot.
The New Guineas?
No,
or
not
the old fashioned.
The old fashioned impatiens, okay. But they don't look that great. But are they starting to develop those more the hardier or the disease-resistant versions that they were shooting for?
I know they're working on it like crazy because the impatiens is one of the most popular. If it's not the most popular shade annual, it's pretty darn close. I know the New Guinea impatiens have been touted as a substitute or a terrenia or some of these others, the wishbone flower, but they are different. And begonias, it's a different look.
Mm-hmm.
They're not impatiens. So, from what I've heard, they're still working on it. I don't know if they've actually found resistant cultivars, but that they're trying to isolate them so that they haven't been exposed. Truthfully, I'm probably going to get hung for saying this, I think I'd just wait a little bit more on the impatiens before I purchase them. I'm not sure I would...
Still, they are not.
I'm not sure. I haven't seen the all clear sign, and maybe after this, someone's going to call me up. Deb, you're getting the all clear sign, but I haven't seen it.
I've seen them, but they don't look that great. So, James in Clintonville, you're on the air with Deb Kanapke. Hi, James.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
So, I guess the last message is not to be impatient with your impatience.
Yeah, that was good.
Touche, James.
Yes, don't be impatient with your impatiens, and possibly take a look at the New Guineas right now. They are not susceptible to the downy mildew problem.
Is that the new Guinea?
There are lots of New Guinea cultivars out there with variegated leaves, brightly colored flowers. reds, oranges, purples, pinks. But I'm not sure what you mean by the new guineas.
But that's not why you called, James.
Oh, okay.
No, actually, so to get to a couple reasons I called. Firstly,
okay.
I really enjoy hearing Deb Snapke on the show, not only
Thank
because I'm an avid gardener, but also because every time I hear her name, it reminds me of my dear friend Jim Napke, who left us a long time ago and way too young. But I've got a question about my red bud, which I put in, I think, the season before last and did great. Last fall, it got way too tall and should have been trimmed and wasn't. And now it's not budding at all, but we've cut it back, and it looks like the wood has some vitality to it. So I'm wondering if I can jumpstart it by feeding it a lot of manure or anything else.
Well, it certainly doesn't hurt a tree or any plant to give it a nice 1.5 to 2 inch layer of compost. Scratch up the top layer of soil and lay the compost down on top, not necessarily disturbing too much of the soil. Although some people will do vertical mulching where they actually make a vertical slit around the tree, you know, about, how big was the root ball when you put it in?
Not very big at all, you know, maybe a foot.
Okay, so about 2 feet out from the tree, making vertical slits, putting in compost, you know, kind of widening it, shove some compost in there. That's vertical composting. But it doesn't hurt to do adding compost around a tree. What you don't want to do is put it right up against the trunk. Please leave about 4 inches of space all the way around the trunk. By vitality, do you mean that it was green and supple?
I accidentally dropped.
Oh, okay. So. All right, so you're accidentally dropped, but if the branch is green and supple and not dry and crackly, then yes, there is some vitality there, and just give it a chance. The red buds were slow, although mine did eventually come into full bloom, and it's ending that bloom now. So watch it. Give it another 2 weeks, and it doesn't hurt to give it compost.
Thanks, James, for that question. My guest is Deborah Knapke, Ohio's Garden Sage. We are broadcasting live today from the Chadwick Arboretum and Learning Gardens 2014 plant sale on the OSU campus. We'll return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Ann Fisher. We are broadcasting live today from the Chadwick Arboretum and Learning Gardens annual plant sale on the OSU campus. For more information, go to our website at wosu.org/allsides. And we have a link there for you with more information about the sale, where it's located on the campus along Lane Avenue, and so forth and so on. My guest this hour is Ohio's Garden Sage, Deborah Knapke, here to answer your questions and mine about gardening after this polar vortex of a winter. If you have any questions, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Jason in Columbus, you're on the air with Deborah Knapke.
Hi. I have a quick question about, I have a Russian sage bush that I trimmed down, and it's growing, but where I've trimmed down the main part of the bush, it's not growing at all. It's actually sprouting up all around the main part kind of wildly. And I didn't know if I should just assume that the main part of the bush is not going to come back, and it's just going to kind of be random and sporadic.
In a winter like we have had, it is not uncommon for the upper part of a Russian sage to die back like that, and then you get new growth from underneath, from the roots. So that's what you're seeing. Again, another response to the winter we had. Russian sage will do that anyways, but this year I'm seeing more of it because the top has died, and so getting more from the roots. So that's what's going on.
Okay, Jason, thanks for that call. Sheila in Reynoldsburg, you're on the air. Hi, Sheila.
Good morning.
Good morning.
we bought a house in August of 2012, almost 2 years ago, and last summer we discovered behind many weeds a pretty dead-looking vine, which we left, and this year it's budding and has tiny bunches of grapes on it. So I'm very excited about it, but I want to know what we need to do to take care of it and encourage it along so that it actually produces.
Okay, not knowing what type of grape it is.
Yeah, no idea.
That's something you'll probably find out once they're ripe enough for you to taste. But there is an excellent fact sheet, because it's a whole long what to do with grapes. A great fact sheet on Ohio Line, which is the Ohio Extension Service. And there are all kinds of fact sheets for all kinds of fruits, but there's a good one for grapes. So get online and take a look at that. But essentially, it will tell you how to prune, how much watering, what kind of pest problems you might have, etc.
Okay, Sheila, thanks for that call. Chris in Lancaster, you're on the air. Hi, Chris.
Yeah, hi. How you doing?
Good.
First of all, I listen to your show all the time, and I love when you guys have the agricultural part.
Thank you.
Normally, I'm pretty good about this stuff, but I'm stumped on this one. I have a 10-year-old purple sage. I got it planted on the southwest corner of my house. It gets a lot of sun. I know they're typically North African plants, so I made sure it's in an area that doesn't get much water, well-drained, good sun. I'm wondering, but it's dead. And I was wondering if maybe, I didn't know if we had a lot of wind, because there's an open area field back there, and maybe it got too much wind. Is that possible?
It's entirely possible, and at 10 years, it might be done. By purple sage, I'm assuming you're talking about the one we can eat, but it has purple color on the leaf, Salvia officinalis, the one we use in our turkey. Okay, turkey stuffing. North African plant, it's interesting you should say that, because it's Eurasian. But sometimes they get so woody. They are a subshrub, so their new growth is herbaceous. Their old growth is that woody part. And periodically, they will die back way down to where you're only going to get bud break on your lower branches. I had that happen on my 8-year-old sage this year. Fortunately, I looked down, I cut down to where I was getting live wood, and then now it's coming back and it's going to be absolutely beautiful, but it's certainly not going to be 3 feet tall and 3 feet wide this year. So take a look at it and see if maybe you're not getting some growth from at the very bottom. If not, then it's time to go out and buy another one.
Thank you, Chris, for that call. We appreciate it. Sean in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Sean.
Oh, hi. Love your show.
Thank you.
I'm trying to plant my own bonsai, and admittedly, I know nothing about it, but been trying to learn online, and it's all very confusing. The seed I'm trying to plant is the Polonia tomentosa, Empress tree. And I just want to know, what kind of ideas should I have about, like, planting the soil and stuff like that? I mean, I know you don't have much time left, but I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Sean.
Okay. First of all, the Paulownia, the Empress tree, it's quite a vigorous grower. And if it's not germinating, that might mean that the seed is dead. But that's an interesting tree to bonsai. Good luck with that. And you might want to check with Franklin Park Conservatory, by the way. They often have classes on doing your own bonsais and often will supply the plants for you to purchase, or it might be part of the actual class. But in terms of soil, Paulownias usually, they usually have about 110% germination rate. So I'm not sure why.
That's good.
Yeah. I'm not sure why you're having a problem, but it might be that you're keeping it too wet or too dry. Even moisture is what you need to do when you're starting seeds.
Okay. Thanks a lot for that call. And Robin in Pickerington, you're on the air. You want to talk about those knockout roses. Welcome.
Oh, boy. I've had a lot of questions about them this year.
Hi, Robin.
Hi. Thank you for having the show. I thought that they were dead. They had been over 6 feet tall in front of the house, and I cut them down to 1 or 2 feet.
and they just look dead. But yesterday, I saw some growth right at the base.
Good.
Of three of the four of them, and I was wondering, should I just go ahead and cut it down, you know, to that level, or what? I really thought they were gone, so I am happy to see the growth, but what do I do with them now? I don't want them to, well, what should I do?
Okay. The three out of the four that you're seeing green, that's a good sign. The knockouts came on slowly this year. They were a little bit, pardon the pun, knocked out by the winter. But they are coming back from their roots, and since they are on their own roots, you are getting your knockout rows back. So it won't be 6 feet tall this year, but it may get up to 3 feet because they are vigorous growers. The fourth plant, just keep an eye on it the next couple of weeks. If you don't see anything, take it out and replace it.
Okay, Robin, thanks for that call. And Angie and Powell, you're on the air. Hi, Angie.
Hi there.
Hi.
I heard the garden sage talking on the air a couple weeks ago about the cones of mulch surrounding trees.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Well, I had an experience about 5 years ago. I purchased a tree through the Powell wholesale. They had a wholesale kind of program where you could buy a tree for wholesale price, and they would plant it for you. And I was shocked at how they planted it. They left half of the root ball sticking above the ground so that when, if I put any mulch around it, even if it's only a half an inch of mulch, it looks like a cone of mulch surrounding the tree.
Okay.
They said it was for drainage reasons.
You don't want anyone to judge you, right, Angie?
Yeah, right. Yeah, and they said it was for drainage reasons. Could that be true?
There is a school of thought that says the higher you plant the tree, the better. I call it laziness, and putting, I'm sorry, I'm going to get hung for that one too. I think if you're going to plant a tree, you need to figure out where the root flare is. And in some of our containers, the root flare has been buried. So some people like to plant it high so that we can keep that root flare up there. But once you find out where that root flare is, it should be at the level of the ground or maybe just slightly above, but not halfway, a root ball halfway out
of
the ground.
What can she do now? Just build up the soil around it?
You can build up the soil around it, put a bed around it, make sure that you can see, you know, a root flare somewhere. When you mulch it, go ahead, put 2 inches of mulch on it. Just keep it, again, 3 to 4 inches away from the trunk. You don't want mulch right next to a trunk ever, ever. And yeah, it'll look a little bit like a cone of mulch, but it'll be obvious that it's really not all mulch that you're dealing with, but you have half a root ball sticking out of the ground. And if it is a good place for you to put a bed around it, you can do a bit of a raised bed and put in some good topsoil plus compost and have a win-win situation there.
Okay, Angie, good luck.
Yeah, good luck.
Thanks a lot for that call. Amanda in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Amanda.
Hi. Your question. Oh, sorry, my son just started crying.
Oh, of course.
We have some azaleas that have been in our yard for quite some time. And they've always bloomed really beautifully. And this year, only one of them is blooming. And the other two are pretty dry around the flower buds. Well, I really don't have many buds. And I'm wondering if I should cut them back now or if I should wait until everything is done for spring flowering and do a hard prune on those.
Okay, well, I have one quick question. You said the bed is dry because azaleas do not like dry soil. They don't like to be in wet, but they like moist soil during their growing time and blooming time. This time of the year, it's very important to them. So if that bed is dry, that is part of your problem. The other part of the problem is that the buds of an azalea and a rhododendron are made the previous fall, and this winter might have been just too much for them. So it's not that, now if the no leaves are coming on, then you may have top kill of your shrubs and you prune down to where you get to where you can see viable wood. It's supple, it's green, etc. But if you don't have any of that, then it's, I guess you need to replace them, although I'd be surprised that they would die down to the ground if they're that old and established.
Okay. Amanda, good luck with those azaleas. Mm-hmm. We have an email from Jordy who says, my wisteria is 30 years old. My wisteria is 30-year-old vines.
Wow.
It is not blooming. Any ideas for recovery?
Okay. Since it's an email, I can't ask you a question if it ever bloomed. I'm assuming it did.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you wouldn't keep it for 30
right.
years.
And, yeah.
But again, wisteria, it may have been affected by the cold. If this is just the first year it didn't bloom, I would suspect a winter issue. If it's the second year it didn't bloom, take a look at nutrition. You may be giving it too much nitrogen if you're feeding a tree in the same area. And if that's the case, you're going to have great leaves and no flowers or few flowers. Any nutrition you give it should be higher in phosphorus and potassium, not in nitrogen.
Okay, good luck with that, Jordy.
Yeah.
What should people be doing in their garden right now, in your opinion? If they're just a gardener, not vegetable gardening, but just
not vegetable gardening,
outside of vegetable.
Weeding, putting down mulch, breaking up the soil if there's crust from all the rain we've recently had. Oh my gosh.
How can you tell when your soil is good?
Oh, you know that at this time of year you go in and you can dig it with your hands like I can.
And what
and
comes
like
up
you
with
can,
it?
You said.
Yes.
What comes up with it is it comes up and it's this beautiful soil that is darkish in color and smells healthy earth.
And worms in it?
And worms and mycelia, little white threads from fungi and, oh, you know, little slime trails inside from other things. Just wonderful. Just things crawling around.
Busy.
Busy, yes. It's living. Soil's living. It shouldn't look dead.
And we still have about a minute. What about the mulch thing? It's a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about it's like cones of shame, you know, the cones of killing mulch. Mm-hmm. Why do they hurt when they're up against the trunk?
There are organisms in mulch that are decomposers. That's what their job is, to decompose the mulch. If they go up against the tree, they could affect the bark, especially on thin barked trees. So you don't want these microorganisms saying, hey, let's start on this stuff, instead of working on the mulch. So it's just healthier for the tree to keep it away. And the same with newly emerging crowns of herbaceous perennials and annuals. You don't want that mulch working on new live material. You want it working on the mulch that's there.
Uh-huh. And then the depth of the mulch?
I like 1.5. Oh, you can go 3 inches. But
uh-huh.
I don't like it deeper than that.
Because why?
Because you still want air and water to be able to infiltrate down into the soil. If you have this huge mulch layer, the mulch is getting wet, but nothing's going down to the soil. So you don't want to block water and air from getting to the roots of your plants. And your plants need both, not just water. They need air, too.
Deborah Knapke, thanks so much for joining
You're
us.
Very
really
welcome.
Appreciate it. Deborah Knapke, Ohio's Garden Sage. We've been broadcasting live from the Chadwick Arboretum and Learning Gardens annual plant sale. If you want more information on that, you can go to WOSU.org/allsides and find out where we're at. And it's on through tomorrow, so check it out. I want to say thanks to the All Sides staff. It includes producer Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurevich, assistant producer Rachel Quimby, production assistants Olivia Rojas, Justin English, Emmy Beach, Julia Hyder, with video production by Rich Karsmitsky and Amber Karsmitsky. Thanks to Leticia Wiggins for helping us out today on site here at the Chadwick Arboretum and Learning Gardens annual plant sale. And also thanks special to senior broadcast technician Eric French for helping make it all happen.
Thanks
for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.